Alfred Austin was the poet laureate of Britain just over 100 years ago, and he once wrote, "We come from the earth, we return to the earth, and in between, we garden." During the pandemic, Katie Merritt got acquainted with how the garden at her own recently purchased country home in Connecticut could become a source of healing. She includes a generous serving of beautiful photos and inspiring literary quotes in her book called Becoming a Gardener: What Reading and Digging Taught Me About Living. Katie served as chair of Friends of the High Line in New York City. That's the park that converted more than a mile of elevated railway into a walkway filled with greenery. And she's long advocated for public spaces where anyone, with or without a garden of their own, can catch their breath and enjoy the fragrances and beauty nature brings us each season. Katie's back with us right now on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us about some of her favorite public gardens around the world. Katie, welcome back.
Rick, it's a great pleasure. Thank you.
So, Katie, you have written so eloquently about your own garden in Connecticut as kind of a countryside refuge from New York City in a certain way. And I know that you've traveled a lot and have been inspired by other gardens, both in the United States and overseas. And it's nice to have you with us just to share your thoughts on great gardens so people who want to add a little extra dimension to their own gardens might also be inspired. Would you mind if I just had a few minutes to pop some gardens to you and let us know why they inspired you?
Delighted.
All right, because I know one of your favorite places on the entire planet is in Italy, the Garden of Ninfa. What is it about that garden?
Ninfa is, to me, the most magical place on Earth. And in fact, I, at that point, not a gardener at all, described it as such. And in fact, I used the word paradise for the first time in my life. But I've paid attention, and in my research for this book, I've noticed other writers have talked about just that it is their most magical place, and they've used specifically the word paradise.
It's a medieval town at the base of a mountain range in central Italy. What is it near? How would we find Ninfa?
It's about 2 hours southwest of Rome.
Southwest,
and
okay.
It's a relatively easy drive. It does take a while to get there.
Yeah.
The first time I visited, I was with my family. Our children were on spring break. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm forcing them to drive 2 hours outside of Rome on a day when they love Rome to go see this garden. And when we arrived, this very friendly dog greeted us, and we walked into a dream setting. It was extraordinary. It's an old medieval ruin that then lay in wreckage for hundreds of years. It wasn't until the early 20th century that the family that had always owned it started to renovate it, and they've been renovating it now for about 100 years. It's become a little bit better known recently, but it's still a relatively hidden gem.
Again, this town is Ninfa, N-I-N-F-A, a couple hours south of Rome, and it's a garden that's growing in a ruined medieval town. What a evocative kind of setting, I would imagine.
It is. There are roses climbing over ruins. There are tangled branches everywhere. There is a stream coming from this mountain range that has the clearest water I have ever seen. In fact, there was a hut there, a little thatched hut, right by the stream, where the Italian writer Giorgio Bassani wrote The Garden of the Finzi Contini.
Oh,
very haunting
goodness.
And moving book that then ultimately became a famous movie.
Another garden I know that you know and appreciate is much easier to get to, simply right downtown Paris, Luxembourg Gardens.
That was my first favorite place in the world until I discovered Ninfa.
Yeah.
And I first went there on my first trip to Paris when I was 23.
How do you appreciate Luxembourg Gardens?
Walking in there, there's a majesty to it with the beautiful Senate building and those huge urns and the classic structure of the paths and the almost boulevards and the flowers and the boat basin. So I think of it as having a very timeless, classic beauty. At the same time, I think there's a very everyday humanity to it. The first time I went there, it was a cold December morning, but it was very sunny. And I remember loads of people sitting on those little chairs, that are very yeah. iconic chairs, surrounding the boat basin.
Yeah.
And they were simply enjoying the day and soaking up the sun. So it was the combination of the two that at that time, when I was 23 years old, brought me to tears. And I can't remember anything bringing me to tears before that.
I realized then
how much I loved it, and I've gone every single time I've been to Paris.
Hey, when I was looking through your book, Katie, I kept thinking of Beatrix Potter's cottage up in Cumbria in North England. I guess there's something about the sort of messy English untended gardens that are, they have such a personality. What is your experience with Beatrix Potter? Do you know how that would be sort of connected to what I saw in your book?
I love that idea. In fact, I have two books about Beatrix Potter's own garden. Uh-huh. And I've read a bit about her. I find her totally charming and wonderful. But in particular, the garden in Peter Rabbit is a character in the book. And I think knowing about Beatrix Potter and Peter Rabbit made me realize how important gardens can be in a book. And for instance, you think about The Secret Garden. It's all about a magical garden.
Yes.
And I think when we look back, there are lots of books that we've all enjoyed where the garden actually plays a major role.
Katie Marin's taking us to some of the great gardens of Europe and America right now on Travel with Rick Steves. She's the author of Becoming a Gardener, What Reading and Digging Taught Me About Living. Let's talk about gardens in the United States and what we can learn about American-style gardening. There's a museum in Boston that you like, Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum.
Yes, that's right. And when I started to think about doing this book, my imagination started to roam. And I realized everyone needs to tap into their imagination to create a garden, because really, what do you do with a plot of earth? You can do whatever you want. So it really comes out of you. And I thought back to places I'd been that I loved, the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum totally being one of them. I went to college outside of Boston. And I would go there. I'd make a special effort all on my own, one afternoon here and there, and several times over the course of a school year, to go see that garden. Mm. And I'd take subways and a train and a bus, and then a long walk over the Fenway Park field to get to this Italianate Renaissance building, because she had copied that years and years ago. But the most amazing part was this interior courtyard, which was full of flowers at any time of year. And I was spellbound by that.
Yeah, you wrote how it was an ideal place to be alone to collect your thoughts. This is Travel with Rick Steves, and we're talking with Katie Marin. And Katie's been a fixture with the arts and cultural organizations in New York City now for years. She wrote for Vogue. She's been on the board of such city giants as the Met, the New York Public Library, the Friends of the High Line, and the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation. But moving to a country house in nearby Connecticut presented Katie with a new opportunity to develop her skills at feeling rooted at home. Katie wrote a book about it. It's called Becoming a Gardener, What Reading and Digging Taught Me About Living. Katie, it's so nice to have you and to share some thoughts on gardening that we can splice into our upcoming travels. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that you enjoy the Garden Museum in London. I've never been there. It's just across the river from the Houses of Parliament. You can walk there in 10 or 15 minutes from Big Ben. And it's a history of garden design. I think it's the first museum of its kind in the world, the Garden Museum in London.
It is. And it has a very visionary, kind leader named Christopher Woodward, who's very enthusiastic about the garden and the museum. They do very innovative programs and have amazing exhibitions of all sorts. I'm continually not surprised, but pleased by the originality of what they do there. They are also near housing districts where people maybe are not as privileged as elsewhere in London, and they do a lot for the people of the neighborhood. It's very moving what they do for all sorts of people. And of course, what better place in England to have a garden museum?
It's on my list. And, you know, I got to say, just because of the chores of researching and writing my guidebooks, I've had to visit the great countryside gardens in England and in Ireland and in Wales. And they are always worth the time and trouble to visit. The English and the British and the Irish, they just really know how to put a garden together over the generations and then share it with the public in a beautiful way.
I agree with you. In fact, in my reading for my book, I read that in England, gardening is a religion.
And the Garden Museum in London fills a church, literally.
That's true.
Hey, Katie, we've been talking about gardens all over the place, but Basically, you're a New Yorker. And you were the expert, the go-to person on public spaces, green spaces, gardens in New York. What are some of the green spaces that you remember most fondly in New York City that we should have on our list next time we visit?
There are many parks in New York City, which I think is one of the city's great pleasures. In fact, many years ago, there was the theory that every human being should be able to be a 10-minute walk from a park. So there are lots of small parks, but hands down, the most amazing one to me of all is the High Line, which is only now just over 10 years old. And it's extraordinary. As many people know, it's a ribbon of pathways, really a couple of stories higher than the street level of New York, winding through a promenade, in essence, in the sky of the most beautiful, luscious planting. Mm. And someone called it an urban trail. That is pure, pure joy to be there.
Now, this is an elevated train line that's no longer used for trains, isn't that right?
That's absolutely right.
And can you access it at any number of places?
You can access it every several blocks.
Oh, and
so it's really very easy to hop on and hop off, almost like a train in that regard.
And it's a nice hike. I remember walking it, and it's quite long. How long is it?
It's in a mile and a quarter.
A mile and a quarter. So that's a good walk and a good slice of life in New York City. And that's a beautiful thing. And I would imagine it was gratifying work for you to be on the board of the High Line.
Very.
Yeah.
Very.
This is Travel with Rick Steves, and Katie Marin's our guest. She's written a sumptuous book called Becoming a Gardener and outlines the life lessons digging in your own dirt can provide. Katie's also written about the value of public spaces in her earlier books, City Squares and City Parks. We have a link to her work and her earlier interviews with us at ricksteves.com/radio. Hey, we've got a couple more minutes, Katie, and I'd love to talk about a few gardens that I know you would like to visit that are on your list and why. Places you've yet to go yet. In Normandy, there's a garden called Le Jardin Plume. What appeals to you about that?
The fanciful nature of the grasses, which in fact I came to appreciate through the High Line, the way they blow in the wind. This garden was created by one couple over the last 20 or so years. And it has not only these wonderful loose grasses, but a very unusual hedge, sort of undulating waves, and at the same time, a very strict classical structure. And as I think about this, I realize that I clearly appreciate the combination of the classical and the informal. And as we were talking about the Luxembourg Gardens, that would be the case here as well.
As you were talking about grasslands, it reminded me the National Museum in Edinburgh in Scotland has a roof that is totally filled with the various grasses you'll find when you go around Scotland. And it's a beautiful experience to be on the rooftop and to be able to actually walk through, you know, rummage through, explore your way through all the grasses that you find in the countryside.
That must be very beautiful.
It's nice. Also, you want to visit a garden in the Netherlands, the Piet Oudolf Gardens. Why would that be?
Yeah, in that sense, I'd like to visit his garden because it's so well known. There have been books on it. He and his wife have worked on it as basically an experimental bed for many, many years. But also, in particular, because I admire him so much, as do so many people, but in particular for me, because he's the garden designer behind the High Line.
Ah, well, that would be the connection. Yeah,
and talked to us once, and he showed us schematics of what he had done. And he somehow manages to pack so many plants into a square foot that it's almost hard to comprehend. And yet it all looks so natural.
Ah, so you could pick up some tips, I suppose, for your own home garden after visiting Piet Oudolf's gardens in the Netherlands.
I'd love that.
Yeah. And then you want to go to Derek Yarman's garden in Kent? On the English Channel, Dungeness?
Yes, because it's so stark and so unusual. He was a filmmaker that is revered by many people, and I've certainly read about this very bare land with this funny garden popping up with all sorts of rocks and stones and plants here and there surrounding his cottage. And again, it's totally free. Anyone who drives out there can wander around it and look at it. And it's just struck me that it would be so unusual. I'd really like to go see it.
And then finally, you want to visit Thomas Jefferson's gardens at Monticello in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Yes, and that's a lot to do with his vegetables. He was a very, very highly regarded vegetable gardener. In fact, he was some sort of a genius and an inventor. He searched out exotic varieties of peas or kidney beans or whatever the plant and hybridized them to create new ones. But he has an expansive garden full of healthy vegetables. And since my garden is a kitchen garden, coming out of early American gardens and my feeling for the heritage of America, I really wanted to go see this extraordinary garden.
In fact, Katie, in your book, Becoming a Gardener, you actually quoted Thomas Jefferson, and he wrote, "The greatest contribution one can make to their society is to bring it one more useful plant." And apparently he did a lot of that. And you can be inspired by that at his gardens today at Monticello.
That's right.
Katie Marin, so nice for you to join us and share your passion and your expertise in gardens. And I know that a big part of your life in the last couple of years has been to buy this place in the peaceful countryside of Connecticut and to create a garden that gives you an extra dimension to your life, a garden that you can become rooted. And with all of the sightseeing and appreciating and study that you've done for gardens over the years, how has all of that exposure to great gardens been influential as you have built the garden, planted the garden, raised the garden of your dreams in Connecticut?
I think visiting gardens and beautiful gardens is inspiring just for what they can offer. When I think about the gardens that I've loved and over many years, from Luxembourg Gardens to Ninfa to the Isabella Stewart Gardening Museum, they're very grand. And my garden is very simple and small. So in that sense, there was no direct correlation between the two. But the sense of natural beauty is there in their gardens or in my garden.
You know, it's so beautiful to page through your book and see how important all of this celebrating of nature through your gardening, how important it's been for you. Can we just wrap it up with a thought from you on gardens, grand or intimate? Grand like at a palace or intimate like the one you just created in your backyard. What has digging taught you about life, about living?
It's taught me about so many of the essential qualities of a good life, from happiness to sanctuary to beauty. Most of all, I think a stronger connection to nature, and in that sense, rooting myself to the land. And I think as we all want that in some way or other, making a garden has certainly done that for me.
Katie Marin, you are an inspiration. Thanks for writing your book, Becoming a Gardener, What Reading and Digging Taught Me About Living. And best wishes. We'll look forward to talking with you again soon. Thanks again, Katie.
Thank you very much, Rick.
You can listen to Katie Marin's earlier visits with us on Travel with Rick Steves from the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. It's a completely different kind of beauty on the treeless slopes of Northwest Alaska. Hear what that's like next on Travel with Rick Steves. Thank you.